In 1967, a 17-year-old Johnny Erickson broke her neck after diving into some unexpectedly shallow waters in the Chesapeake Bay. And she was paralyzed from the shoulders down. So she spent days in a hospital begging God to heal her. And then after he did not, she begged a friend to kill her. 50 years later, she's never walked again. But listen to what she said just in the last couple of months. It sounds incredible, but I would really rather be in this wheelchair knowing Jesus as I do than be on my feet without him. She says she celebrates that glorious but awful, beautiful but sad, terrible but wonderful day I broke my neck because look at what God has done. A friend of hers summarized her perspective, and this is a quote that she uses frequently, in 10 words. God permits what he hates to accomplish what he loves. But why can't God accomplish what he loves without allowing what he hates? And I think any parent knows the answer to that. I mean, what parent has not allowed their child to go through things they hate in order to accomplish what they love? I love who my 3 daughters have become as adults. I hate some of what they've endured and continue to endure to become who they are. If I had the power, I would take much of what they had to endure and still do from them, but I don't have the power, and it's a good thing. Because I don't see what God sees. Because I would take from them what has made them and is making them them. So we can ask for, and we should ask for what we want. He is our Father. But we have to learn to trust what he gives because he is God. And he's making us into sons and daughters who reflect Christ. And so we have to learn how to be grateful for the total work he's doing in our lives. But this talk of gratitude in the face of difficulty can be troubling. Johnny Erickson's perspective is beautiful, but her suffering is terrifying to me. And so what are the options? Well, we can take the common approach, which is avoid and deny, which is not really a strategy at all. We can just not talk about it, trying to think about it. We can also learn not to live with gratitude and become hard and bitter as time goes on. But the option we really, really want, we don't have, and that is opt out of difficulty, suffering, trouble altogether. You're going to have trouble in this life. Jesus affirmed that. John 16. In this world, you will have trouble. But he also affirmed the fact that this does not have to rob us of courage and confidence. Because the next thing he said was, but take heart. Take heart there is be bold, be confident, be full of hope, because I've overcome the world. Choosing gratitude and thanksgiving in circumstances, all circumstances, I think is tied most directly to trust. Because gratitude is answering the question, is God trustworthy, with yes. Read this with me together. If you'd read it out loud with me, I'd appreciate that. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. So he is writing to a church that's having trouble, and he says, rejoice in the Lord always. And I can imagine as soon as he wrote that, he's thinking what they're probably thinking. They're thinking, Paul, do you remember what's going on here? And so he immediately writes, I'll say it again. And he's saying, yeah, you heard me right. Rejoice. We're not immune from sorrow. We're not oblivious to the troubles of others, but Paul's exhortation is to rejoice in the Lord always. And this is not this generic, just think happy thoughts. When we're learning to want what he wants, we're able to learn to rejoice in the Lord despite our circumstances. So confidence in God is believing that we would want what he wants if we knew what he knows. So Paul doesn't just say rejoice, but rejoice in the Lord. The rejoicing is specific. We're to learn to rejoice in him. Otherwise, our gratitude is going to be dependent on circumstances which shift all the time. But he doesn't. Let your gentleness be evident to all, the Lord is near. Gentleness is not soft-spoken. It's not being passive. It's not a personality type. It's a word that's hard to translate into English but it means generally the willingness to yield your own rights to serve other people. It's an application of the gospel in relationship to other people. So as we learn to rejoice in the Lord because we're learning to trust Him, the interpersonal application of this will be seen in the way we treat others. We put their interests ahead of our own. That's how Paul is describing gentleness here. That's what that word means. It means I'm not going to try to win my way. I'm not going to make life about me. Jesus was gentle, but He was certainly not weak or passive. And it was from His strength that He put other people first. You know, if you're weak or passive, you don't put other people first. They just jump in front of you. You put other people first when you have a position of strength. And from that strength that flows from a relationship with Jesus, you allow people to have their interests first. And so rejoice in the Lord and put others first. It's flip sides of a single coin. And without these two things together, we're going to live in ongoing frustration because God often doesn't do things like we want Him to, and neither do others. And so we have to choose gratitude to God and service for others. The opposite of gratitude is not ingratitude, it is demanding. Demanding that God and others comply with my will and with my wishes. And people who try to live this way, even when they get their way, are very unhappy people. And they will become, over time, increasingly desperate people because eventually they'll not get what they want because their wanting becomes insatiable. People who live for themselves become like black holes. Nothing can fill it. Nothing can. Verse 6, don't be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. Anxious here translates a word that can have a positive or a negative sense. Back in chapter 2, verse 20, he used the same word to describe taking a genuine interest in others' well-being. Here it describes something unhealthy, not genuine interest in others, but self-focused anxiety. And the difference, I think, is which column do these things fall into. If you've been around, you've heard more than you want, probably, me talk about right column and left column. Left column are things we can't control, only God can. Right column are things that we have responsibility for. And right column, the things that we have control over and responsibility for, that's the active part of this. That's not the passive anxiety. That's the active, taking an interest in things we can control. The left column, things I have no control over, that's where the negative anxiety falls. And so we're to act responsibly and decisively in the right column, things God's given us to do. But we're to trust God resolutely in the left column, not to live in anxiety there. The right column tends to get us up in the morning. What has God given me to do? The left column is what can keep us awake at night. What worries me but belongs to God. That's God's domain. And my anxiety is evidence that I'm venturing there in my heart and mind in inappropriate ways. And so His peace indicates that we're in bounds, and our anxiety can indicate that we're out of bounds. Verse 7, the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. God's peace is seen here as something that's not explainable in mere human terms. Johnny's peace is transcendent. It's not something she just worked up all by herself. God gave it to her. And this same peace of God acts like a sentinel or a guard over our hearts and minds. When we step out of bounds, we lose this peace. And this lack of peace is evidence that we're either not trusting Him or we've moved into rebellion in our lives. Now, I want to give a caveat here. There's an important warning. Be careful because this phrase, the peace of God, is often misused, I think. I don't feel a peace is overused as a guide for personal decision making. I don't feel a peace about that decision. I do feel a peace about it. But what you feel is often neither here nor there as to whether you're making a good or bad choice. We can too easily and too quickly associate our feelings of peace or not feeling peace as the will of God. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I think it's often evidence that we trust our feelings way too much. We can associate certain feelings as faith or signs of affirmation, and others as signs we're going the wrong way. But sometimes the feelings we have are psychological or physiological. They're not spiritual at all. We may believe we're trusting God, when in fact we're just trusting a feeling. You can have a peace about something because you want it to be true. You can have a lack of peace about something because it's going to be really hard. Funny how that is. Listening to good counsel about important decisions is a much wiser and more biblical approach to decision making than listening to a subjective sense of peace. Now, the subjective sense of peace or no peace, it is a factor, but it cannot be a bigger factor than counsel and plain old wisdom. And the context here is not about decision-making at all. It's about worrying about things we should not be worrying about. And peace here is like a referee. When you're in bounds and you're thinking, there's no whistle. Play on. But when you get out of bounds and you're thinking, lots of whistles and flags. Stop play. You're out of bounds. You're not trusting. You're anxious about things you can't control. And most often, that's what we are anxious about, things we can't control. So look at the order. Don't be anxious, but in everything pray, and the peace of God will put a guard over your hearts and minds. Anxiety is my attempt to control outcomes, but it's always sideways energy. It's just not going anywhere. Prayer is my choice to recognize who does control outcomes. And then just in case we don't understand that we do have a vital role in this, just in case this turns us into people who think we're just supposed to be passive, listen to what he says next. Finally, whatever is true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, excellent, praiseworthy, think about these things. So we're not to venture into God's realm of responsibility and worry about things we should be trusting him with, but trust is active, it's not passive. We're not merely to try not to worry. That obviously doesn't work. If you've ever tried not to worry, it doesn't work. But we are to set our minds, our thoughts in the right direction. And your part in this process is to determine what thoughts you're going to allow to stay in your minds and shape your beliefs. Because the thoughts you let stay in your mind shape your beliefs, and your beliefs will shape your behaviors, without exception. I've seen it in my life and other lives where a thought takes root in my mind about a person or about a situation. That thought dictates what I begin to believe about that person or situation, and then what I believe determines how I approach the person or situation, my behavior. But what if the thought is wrong? As it sometimes is, then my belief is wrong and my behavior is going to be wrong. A lot of relationships have been undone by wrong thoughts that were allowed to stay in people's minds. Many people have had their confidence in God shaken, not by events, but by the thoughts they allowed to stay in their mind about that event. Because the same event can shake this man's faith and make that man's faith. The difference is not out there, the difference is in here. How do I think about this? And unscrutinized thoughts are like terrorists that we allow into our lives. They can do enormous harm. So Paul's not merely recommending think happy thoughts, think good thoughts, and you'll feel better. He's telling us an essential truth about how God has made us. That what you allow your brain to think about is going to shape what you believe, is going to shape how you behave. So think about these things. Not just don't be anxious, but think about these things. Is it true? Is it real? Or is it not real? Is it noble? Is it worthy of respect? That's what that word means. Is it worthy of my thought time? Is it right? Is it righteous? Is it in line with who God is? Is it pure? Is it morally pure? Or is it evil? Is it carnal? Is it lovely? Is it a pleasant thought? And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's just sort of a happy thought. It means something more potent than that. It means what's going to be the emotional, physical consequence of me thinking these thoughts? What is it going to shape me into? Is it admirable? Does it meet high standards? Is this really the best thought I can muster about this person or situation? Is it excellent or praiseworthy? This is not a checklist. This is a compelling vision for how we're to think. And it shows how important it is that we decide what we will think. I can't decide every thought that pops in my head. I can decide, unless I have some mental illness, which some people do, and that's a different story, but for most of us, I can decide which thoughts I allow to stay. Which thoughts I make at home. What we allow to remain in our brains is what we're giving ultimate power to in our lives. So Paul said in Colossians 2, see to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy. So how can words, how can ideas take you captive? Ideas become beliefs, become behaviors. Ideas can become jail cells. They can become shackles. And notice that Paul says, see to it. It's a very proactive phrase. Don't wait for it to happen to you. See to it that this happens. That's the negative version of being captive, taken captive by empty. Here's the positive version, 2 Corinthians 10. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought and we make it obedient to Christ. Some people have spiritualized that into some sort of a spiritual mumbo jumbo. It's very practical. It's ID your ideas. An idea tries to come in, show me your ID. Doesn't have Christ on it? No. You're not getting in. It doesn't line up with reality. You're not getting in. You're not staying in. I knew a gate guard in Iraq whose job was 12 hours a day was check IDs at the gate. Make sure if you were going to get into this secure area that you belonged in there. He told me about a time where he was at a gate and there was another gate a couple hundred yards away. Heard an explosion and his buddy was killed. And what happened was a guy showed up in a vehicle, borne explosion, explosive device, and this guard checked his ID didn't check out, didn't have the credentials. So he said, you're not getting in. So the guy detonated and blew him up, himself and unfortunately the other guard up. But because he didn't get into the secure area, he saved many, many lives. And these ideas, if they're allowed in, if you don't ID the idea, it can get in and do great damage. Every choice you make is a shaping choice. Everywhere you go is a shaping place. The mall, the store, work, church. Ideas want in all the time. Ideas are wanting in right now all the time. Popping in. Be open to lots of ideas. Don't be a hard head. Don't be narrow-minded. But ID the ideas. Are they true? Do they conform to what's true about God and the world he's made? This is a very active mental discipline here. Take captive every thought. Make it obey Christ. Your worry about your work. Your anger, your frustration about your spouse or your child or your coworker, your fantasy about another person, your fantasizing about a certain activity that you know will only devastate, always has, always will. Your fears about your children, their health, your own health, your death, allowing news stories to dictate your perspective and your mood. Take these thoughts captive. Make them submit to truth. Is this thought in line with what's real and true? You really should not see yourself as someone standing helplessly on a beach as some big massive thought waves come rolling your way. That's not how God's made you. Now, I will say, if you've not, over time, practiced taking thoughts captive, it's going to be more difficult at first because you have a lot of rogue thoughts that you've made at home. And it's going to be hard at first sometimes to distinguish the rogue thoughts from the real thoughts, and you're probably going to need some help from the scriptures and from some friends. But it'll get better as you do it. And a good place to start is with the positive, not the negative. Rather than trying not to think what you shouldn't, give effort to thinking what you should be thinking. Now we're all the way full circle where we began. Rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice. This is something you can and you should do regularly. This is a shaping choice. And it's not vague, it's very specific. We're to contemplate the reality of who God is and what God has done. Worry is normal, and it's ineffective. Jesus said, who of you by worrying can add a single hour to his life? It's a rhetorical question. You can't worry yourself into a certain future outcome. You can't worry your way out of a certain future outcome. You can act. If it's right calling, you can act. We're not passive bystanders in our lives, and we're not in ultimate control of them either. And so the balance is found in living in a trust relationship with Jesus. You have reason to be thankful. Will you be? You'll be transformed by active gratitude if you choose to be. Don't wait for a grateful life to come to you. You're supposed to be going to it. I have a good friend, Robert, who recently, in the last couple of weeks, he was awake in the middle of the night. And he has a business, and he has a lot of people, families. He's responsible for their livelihood. And some bad things happened that he was worried about. And he was up middle of the night worrying. His blood pressure was up. His head was about to explode. And then he did the worst possible thing at 3 in the morning. He checked his text and saw more bad news. And so he tried stretching and mindfulness and breathing and all the things that are good to do, but nothing was happening. He was getting worse and worse. And the Lord spoke to him at 4 in the morning and said, start when you were a boy and remember all I've done in your life. So he went back and started when he was a boy. He said, just a few minutes, my blood pressure was down, my head wasn't hurting. He said, I was even smiling at 4 in the morning. It took him a while to get all the way up to now. He's my age, so it took him a while to go from a boy to now. And then he went to bed and slept well. Now, this was specific to his circumstances. This is not, don't say, okay, I'm going to go and this is a magic pill. What happened was he got perspective on what was real about his business and his life. That's why it has such a profound and immediate effect on his physiology and his mind. When I was in Iraq, I had 4.5 months where I never did feel at ease. But I was at peace with God. And his peace guarded my heart and mind and allowed me to keep on track and keep functioning in spite of anxious feelings. This rejoice in the Lord always is not a one-and-done prayer. My friend, he got perspective, and it impacted his physiology and his mentality. But he's not done. He has to continue to get perspective because we leak perspective. That's why this is rejoice in the Lord always. It's ongoing. For me, at one point in my life, it was minute by minute. Very terrible. It's a terrible way to live, but it's a powerful way to live. But rejoice in the Lord always is a continual, ongoing thing. So we're going to practice this morning. We're going to practice gratitude. So you're going to have a chance to interact with the Lord. You can rehearse out loud or in your mind the words, or you can write on a card. But it's a chance for you to talk with God about what you're grateful for. I would encourage you to not try to think about the things you feel grateful for. That's the common approach. I would encourage you to think about the things that if you saw, like he sees, that you would be grateful for, whether you feel grateful for them or not. It's a very powerful exercise. While we do that, ask God to capture your heart more fully. Rodney's going to sing a song. The band's going to sing a song that speaks to the fact that we are made by God for God, that he is our great affection. And so I'd encourage you to use this time to reflect. After we're done with that time, then we're going to have communion. And Roddy's going to sing, the band's going to sing a song that said, "Don't You Want to Thank Someone?" And I want to tell you why I asked them to sing this song. I was reading recently some of the leading atheists, one of them who's deceased, but another one's still alive. And they are resolutely against God and the faith. And I was reading about how both of these guys are superstitious. One of them read his horoscope every day. One of them's afraid of haunted houses and spooks. And yet they're outspoken atheists. And I thought, you know, the difference between me and them is they have a childish faith and I have a robust, mature faith. Because my faith is in God, not in the alignment of stars. And when these people who disavow God, when they step outside and something touches them, a baby, a sunset, something makes them want to be thankful. Who do they thank? And so this song is pointed at them. Don't you want to thank someone? And thank God that I have someone to thank. When I walk outside and say thank you, I'm talking to someone, not to myself. So reflect, let me pray, and then we're going to have an opportunity to celebrate communion together. Settle in. God, I pray that you would help us to hear from you, those whose lives are very troubled and with good reason. I pray that they would